Hello and welcome to episode number 12 of Light the Eye, presented by the U of I Credit Union. I'm Scott Beatty.
And I'm Robert Rosenthal.
Robert, about 10 years ago, a former Illinois football player made a little proclamation. He said, "We will win."
Yes.
That was Illinois Athletic Director Josh Whitman, who's approaching his 10th anniversary as the AD. He was hired in February of 2016. He officially took over the role in March of 2016. So we thought, that's a reason enough to have the athletic director on. Also, he's the athletic director of the University of Illinois.
Right, so, and this is a podcast about the University of Illinois, so maybe that'd be a good idea to have.
Yeah, and he was gracious to afford us some time.
Absolutely.
Beginning of the year. So looking forward to having Josh Whitman on, and there's only about 700 different issues in college sports that you could dive into.
Yes, and we don't have enough time to cover them all, but I wish we did because his answers are always so well thought out. Go ahead.
I said, producer Maisie is here. Hello, Maisie.
Hello.
Your break's almost over. Is that good or no?
You know, it's partially sad, but I have been really good at doing nothing, which I usually don't do. So maybe time to start doing things again. So here, back in Champaign, ready to go.
I used to have the moments of, like, when I was a student, I guess it's 30 years ago, where it was at near the end of break, like that final week was like, well, okay, I've enjoyed being home, but I feel like I'm ready to go back to Champaign. Like, it's time. I'm good with being at home and having some rules I have to follow or whatever. I'm good going back to my apartment and staying up till 6. So what, do you feel any of that? Is there any of that for you this week?
Yeah, for sure. I would say I've spent most of my break sitting on the couch and watching TV or reading, and then now I'm starting to get to the point where, yeah, I'm ready. I got one semester left, got to spend some time with my roommates, and just have a fun, you know, last drive here at Illinois, which is really sad, but I'll make the most of it. I'm ready for it.
And get to experience senioritis.
Mm-hmm. No. We all have a Midwestern work ethic. Oh, there's no such thing as a senioritis. Right, Maisie?
That's right. Not going to happen.
No. Never senioritis. That no, hit me last semester, but we'll try to get out of it for this final one.
Absolutely. All right. If you're not already motivated, this will definitely motivate you, because before we bring on Josh Whitman, what do, Robert?
We light the eye.
We're so thrilled on this episode to welcome to the program the 14th Illinois Athletic Director, Josh Whitman, who is approaching his 10-year anniversary. That will come in his hiring date next month and took over in March of 2016. Josh, welcome to Light the Eye. Welcome to the Armory, where a place you've been a little bit for athletic events. And now we're here in a studio. And 10 years. How does that sound? A 10-year tenure for you.
It's hard to believe, to be honest. I never would have imagined when I was fortunate enough to step into this position, all that the next 10 years would hold. And my life has changed a lot in those 10 years, including, obviously, and most importantly, adding two incredible children to my life. And just to reflect on the journey is pretty remarkable.
Yeah, coaches get asked about their future from time to time, and they often talk about, well, I'm kind of focused one day at a time. You know, I'm right here, right now. Is that kind of what an athletic director does? Because you never know what the future brings. You kind of go, this is your place. I mean, this is your school.
This is my place. Yeah, it absolutely is. And you know, you do. I think one of the benefits of being here and the support that we've received from the campus more broadly is that we do take a long view with a lot of the things that we do, with a lot of the strategies we put in place. We're fortunate in the sense that I've got a long-term contract, our coaches have long-term contracts. I do think that is central to our strategy right now, is that we're really leaning into this idea of stability, continuity, in a moment of incredible disruption, incredible instability across the system of college athletics. We want our approach to kind of lean opposite. And so I don't think a lot about the last 10 years, but I actually do think a lot about the next 10 years. And it's, I feel very fortunate to be here and to be in a position to have that kind of a long view as we put our plans together.
Well, congratulations. I always kind of keep in my head your start to your time here, just because it was right about the time my daughter was born, our second, and she's going to turn 10 in March. And well, here we all are, and it's congratulations.
Yeah, thanks very much. It's been an unbelievable journey, and again, just so grateful to all of the different people who have been involved in allowing us to experience the success and to stay as long as we have, because without some of this success, undoubtedly, we wouldn't have had the chance to stay. And so that's the way these things work at this level of college athletics, and just more than anything, filled with incredible gratitude for everybody who's been involved in the process.
I've always been curious if when you got the job, I mean, obviously the talk at the time was, hey, he's only been a Division III athletic director. Is he ready for Division I? And we knew from your opening press conference that you said, like, you, as soon as you found out there was such a thing as the athletic director at Illinois, that's what you wanted to do with your life. So I've always been curious of the feeling at the time of, can I get this job? Had they gone with someone else, that someone else might be here for 10 years and you're still at Wash U or you're somewhere else waiting for this to open up. So what was the moment like of, you know, 10 years ago, take me back to, hey, I really want this job. This has been, you know, pinned to my wall for years. I hope I can convince them that I'm the guy.
It was surreal. And I guess just because of the impending anniversary, I've had a chance to think about it a little bit and talk to Hope about it a little bit, reflect on what that couple months felt like. And I think you raise your hand at the beginning. You get contacted by the search firm. They say, are you interested? And, you know, part of the story, and I've never actually told this story before, but when Ron Gunther had retired, I had received some outreach from the search firm that was involved in that process. And I was only a year into my tenure at University of Wisconsin La Crosse. And I actually chose not to get involved at that point in time. I don't think I would have gotten it anyway. In fact, I probably wouldn't have even come close. I think they were calling me more as a courtesy than anything. But at the time, I didn't feel like I was ready. I was, at the time, 33 years old. I had never really been around an organization like this one, obviously in a position like this one. I didn't have the self-confidence or the experience to feel like I could sit across the table from a Power Four head football coach or a Power Four men's basketball coach and really contribute to that relationship in the way that I felt like I needed to. And so I told the group that I wasn't prepared and, sure, and chose to stay there. And again, highly, highly likely I wouldn't have gotten it anyway. But it was an important moment of self-reflection for me to recognize where my own shortcomings were and to know that if I were going to get a job like this at a place that I cared so much about, I was only going to get one chance, and yeah, I better get it right, and I better be prepared to do a good job. And so when the phone rang those number of years later, I went through a lot of the same self-evaluation and had the same internal deliberation around, okay, do I feel like now I am ready? And I don't know that the answer was a unequivocal yes, because I was still pretty young. I was 37 years old. Still hadn't been involved at this level in a role like this one, but had gained a lot of self-confidence over the years that had passed and saw this as a great opportunity. And so at that moment, thought that it was the right move to throw my hat in the ring. And even so, at the time, I was 37 years old. I was a Division III athletic director, and I feel like I have a pretty strong sense of self-awareness, and I knew that the odds of me progressing through the process were still pretty small. Sure. And so I was under no false pretenses about how likely it was that I would emerge at the end as the final choice. And with each step in the process, I just committed to myself to do the best I could and to learn as I was going and to recognize the step that I was trying to take. And it wasn't until the very end when things got real. And all of a sudden it felt like it was a very distinct possibility that this could happen. And that was, you know, really when Hope and I sat down and said, okay, are we serious about this? Are we ready to do this? We had a great situation in St. Louis. She had a fantastic career going. I was really happy at Washington University. And so it probably wasn't as much of a foregone conclusion as people might think that we would do this. Just because we knew, I think at the time, there were two things that we talked a lot about. One, were we prepared for the loss of anonymity that comes with a role like this one in a community like this one? We knew at the time, nobody else knew, that we were pregnant. We were expecting our first child. Were those changes that we were prepared to make at that moment in our life? And then secondly, was the very real possibility that it could be a short tenure. And you come here at 37 years old. You're out by 41. You've had your quote-unquote dream job by 41 years old. And then what do you do? And so we had a lot of really serious discussions about those two things in particular. And at the end of the day, it's the University of Illinois. And it's a place that obviously has meant so much to me and has completely changed my life. And so came to the conclusion that I did feel like I could come here and do a good job. We were prepared for the personal changes that would accompany the position, or at least we thought we were. We decided to lean in. And, you know, here we are all these years later and just so grateful that we made that choice. That's a really long answer to your
question.
It's a podcast.
So. Yeah, that's right. That's right. I'm curious then, did you put that in the final pitch of like, hey, search committee, no pressure, but this is, my whole life has been pointed toward this job. I mean, like, at some point, you know, that has to come up of like, yeah, well, when I was in law school, I was thinking about this job. And when I was in the NFL, I was thinking about this eventual job. I mean, that had to be part of your sales of yourself, right?
Sure. I think that, I mean, to be honest, I don't know that until this job became available that I ever would have told you that all ships were pointed towards becoming the athletic director at Illinois, largely because the odds of getting it are just so, so small that I knew if I set that out there as the only objective, then I was setting myself up for failure, right? It's like catching lightning in a bottle. There's fewer, you know, P4 athletic directors than there are U.S. senators, right? And it's just so few of these positions in the whole country that I just wanted to be in an athletic director position, hopefully at some point at a Division I institution. I wanted to do a good job for whichever school I was representing. And so when this one came available, it just was almost too good to be true. And now what I did do in the process with the search committee, I remember very distinctly preparing, thinking to myself, what are their objections? What are the things they're going to look at me and say, these are the reasons we shouldn't hire him? And they were the things we talked about. I was 37 years old, was a Division III athletic director. And I give this advice to colleagues of mine when they're in a position to pursue other opportunities and say, look, I dealt with those on the front end. I walked in the room, I sat at the table, and I said, my name's Josh Whitman, I'm 37 years old, I'm a Division III athletic director, and those are two things that I cannot change. But let me tell you why I think those two things are advantageous for what we're trying to do together at the University of Illinois. And I just tried to anticipate their resistance on the front end and deal with it proactively before they could ask about it.
Sure, sure.
And in the long run, those things prepared you for this. Maybe it wasn't the traditional route, but do you look back and say, yeah, because of what I had at La Crosse, at Wash U, I actually was prepared. Maybe there was knowledge you had to learn, but I was equipped.
No question. And that was part of my theory as I went through the process, and there haven't been a lot of other people who have been in a position to prove the theory, but the theory was a lot of the same things that I was doing at those other two schools were the things that I would be doing here, and that the two biggest changes here would be, one, obviously the number of zeros on the financial statements that we're getting and looking at each day, each week. And then two, just the level of visibility and attention that comes to every decision you make, every program you have. And so I felt like as long as I could manage the increased scale and the increased visibility, the basic skills of being an athletic director, managing and leading a staff, engaging with student athletes, fundraising, participating in governance, developing strategic plans, these are all the same things here that I was doing there, just at a different scale. And so I did feel prepared from that perspective when I came here and just had to adjust more to the environment than to the day-to-day tasks.
Well, one of the things I think you've done very well, and it's very public, is hire good coaches. The most recent example, we had an episode a few weeks ago looking back at what were some of the great Illini moments of the calendar year, and one of the stories was soccer, getting back into the Big Ten tournament and getting into the NCAA tournament. And, of course, that has a lot to do with Katie Hultin. But you look at Shauna Green, Brad Underwood, Brett Bielema, you've hired good coaches. How does that happen consistently for you and your staff when you – is there – what's the common thread in there?
It's a great question, and I wish I could say that we're always going to bat 1,000. Mm-hmm. The reality is we're not. I haven't, I've learned a lot along the way. We are on a bit of a heater, I guess. We've done well here with our last handful of hires. The thing that I would say that we have learned, that we have tried to be very disciplined in, is we pursue characteristics, not names. And I think early on, I got some of those things out of order and learned as we went that it's more important to determine the qualities and the characteristics that you want to see in the next coach and then filter potential candidates through that profile to see how they match up, to allow yourself to maintain some objectivity, to allow yourself to look through a clean lens at the candidates without getting your head turned by the big name or the popular name or the people everybody is telling you should try and hire. And so we've tried to take as much of the emotion out of it as we can. And we also try to be very prepared and intentional in each of our processes. And so we typically are able to anticipate when a process may be needed, and depending on the position and the situation, we may prepare for a year in advance. We may never need any of that preparation because maybe a change doesn't happen, but if on the chance a change occurs, then that work becomes necessary and ultimately I think has put us into a strong position with some of the hires we've been able to make.
Do you ever get questions about how are you doing it? Especially with your most visible programs, football, men's and women's basketball, where this week both men and women are now back in the AP polls. Obviously football's come, both, in my opinion, are going to be tournament teams. Obviously football's come off two of the most successful years. Has somebody ever come to you and go, how are you having your cake and eating it too? Because at my school, I got this one going, but this one's struggling. And I got 2 out of 3, but 3 out of 3 is a little bit rare. I mean, congratulations, by the way. But is there envy? Is there AD envy out there?
None that anybody's ever going to acknowledge. Yeah, you know, and I think that, there are a lot of great athletic programs out there. There are people doing it at a really high level. And we're just fortunate here to have identified the leadership that we have. So grateful to those coaches you mentioned, so many others that are doing things at a really high level. I had a chance to watch a bit of one of your prior episodes with Petros, and you know what's happening in track and field right now is really remarkable. And then you talk about Katie and, of course, Mike Small and Brad Dancer. And they're not all people I've hired. There's a lot of people here who have – Dan Hartlib continues to do it at an incredibly high level. Renee Sloan is just a couple years removed from a Big Ten championship. You know, Evan Clark is, I think, one of the programs that hasn't garnered a ton of attention but is really doing it at a high level. And so we just got an exceptional group of leaders right now. And to watch the way they work and go about what they do is an honor. And you know, we have a chance to try and be an asset to them and a resource for them as they put their plans together. And you know, some of the new changes in college athletics have allowed us to do that in increasingly creative ways, which has been fun.
There's a wide variety of things we want to cover here, so I'm going to move us to Memorial Stadium now. The day of the Geese announcement of the $100 million donation, there were questions about how is this going to be applied, and you spoke in general to, look, we've already engaged with a design firm to study kind of everything. Where are we at? What do we need to look at? How do we phase this? All that type of thing. What can you share about that, I guess, big picture? I know the scoreboard's coming. I got a question about that in a second. But I guess big picture, what's kind of the time frame for that of we're letting them tell us what they see we need, and then we're going to put together an action plan? Or how will that work out?
Yeah, the stadium is obviously one of the most important projects that we have in the pipeline. It's the most important building on our campus. I believe one of the most important buildings in the state. And so we want to make sure we're thoughtful, intentional in the plans that we put together around that facility. The firm we're working with has spent a lot of time studying the inner bowl, looking at how we might be able to bring those seats forward a bit in terms of the amenities. Can we do some seat backs? Can we do some different tread depths? Where might we be able to create some different premium opportunities within the stadium? If you look at State Farm Center, for example, we have, I think it is, 5 different premium products in State Farm Center. In the football stadium with 4 times as many seats, we only have 3. Mm-hmm. And so might there be an opportunity to incorporate and really continue to, I guess I would say, stratify the fan experience based on the kinds of amenities that people want, the dollar figures that people want to pay or that they're comfortable with. And I think that the stadium gives us a lot of opportunities to do that. Now, what we want to do and what's critical to me, I'm just so proud of the way we did the first major renovation to the stadium and the way that we continued to honor the building, its original design, its footprint. And so as we're very consistent in our messaging to the design firm that there's a certain way that we want to approach this. There's a certain look and a certain feel that are central to us as we put it together that I think creates some extra challenge for the design firm, candidly, but should get us to a better outcome.
So obviously, you know, the biggest first part of this is the new scoreboard, which we've just seen the announcement of what it's going to be
it's
and
really
everything
big.
Else. So what can you tell us about that and what specifically went into those decisions?
We're incredibly excited about it. It's going to be the largest video board in all of college football. It will be almost twice as big as any other board in any other stadium. It'll be 250 feet wide. It'll be almost 70 feet tall. It'll have over 17,000 square feet of digital space. I think it would be maybe the fifth largest board in the NFL. It's a significant piece and a major investment in ultimately the fan experience. And, as we thought about ways to enhance that experience, there are things, and we tried to address many of these over the last several years. You think about concessions, you think about ingress and egress, you think about but then you think about what happens during the game while the game is happening. And the thing about football is we all know there's a lot of stoppage. It's not like basketball where play is fairly consistent. There's a lot of dead time. There's a lot of breaks. There's a lot of timeouts. And so the video board really helps change that experience for our fans. And so it'll provide an entirely different element. It'll have some curvature to it, so it'll align around the curvature of the South Horseshoe. We'll distribute the sound. The primary speaker will move from below the board as it is currently to above the board, which should make for a more enjoyable experience for our fans in the South Horseshoe. And so we're just now, and one of the parts of the charge to our staff has been, look, now we've got a Ferrari. Now we need to make sure we drive it as fast as we possibly can. And so, you know, the idea isn't to go out and have this incredible resource and then do the same old stuff with it. The challenge to our group is to go out and find ways to use this resource to really change the dynamic in our building. And so they're just now in the process of beginning to create those ideas and think through how we can really change what we feel inside the stadium with that board in play.
And maybe this is obvious, but with the design firm and the bigger picture of what you want to do, that feels like the video board's going to be there for a while. It's not now we're switching the horseshoe around, so we're going to take this video board around. So you can work around it.
So I don't see us, to your point, we just made a significant investment in this incredible resource. I don't see us scraping the south end zone and starting over anytime soon, probably at least in the next 10 years. But we have made a lot of investment in that South Horseshoe in recent years. We've redone all of the restrooms. We've added new points of sale for concessions in that area. As part of the scoreboard project, we're going to redo that south wall that creates a perimeter on the south end of the stadium. That will allow us to build more grass and concourse space on the south end to let people kind of spread out as they're congregating there in the concourse area. And so, again, not exactly where we'd like to take that eventually, but for now, with the addition of the video board, with some of the investment we've made there, we continue to feel really good about what we have done in the South. And part of what we really want to study is that open area from the front of the South Horseshoe down to the end line of the South end zone. Knowing that that's some really interesting real estate that could be used for a number of different purposes.
It's really good for snow piles.
It is great for snow piles. Yes, it is. Yes.
And making snow angels.
Yeah.
You can do that, especially if you win over Northwestern.
Yeah.
That's right. Very effective.
That's right.
That's right.
That's right. So we'll see. There are a lot of moving parts there, but ultimately we want to use the board to enhance the experience. We want to try and find some ways to create other pockets of fan engagement around the stadium. That's what people want today. They don't necessarily want to be tethered to their seat. And so can we create some environments, some places where we can create more of that social interaction during the game? One of the spaces that we have that's, I think, unique to our building is we've got the two patios on the northeast corner and the northwest corner. We're evaluating what the best use of those spaces may be on a going forward basis. And so there's a number of different things that are kind of on the table, but we're excited to try and figure those things out. And then we also have a really cool North recruiting lounge under the student section that used to be part of the old football building, looks down into the old football weight room. Right now, it's kind of a flex space. We don't have a defined purpose for that. What's the best way to utilize that to really enhance or offer a new experience for a group of people on game day is another big question that we're asking.
There's a lot of questions right now in college athletics. Like anybody saying, oh, you're talking to athletic director? Ask these 27 portal and NIL questions. Because it is, you know, obviously for fans, it's like the topic. In your media roundtable that you do each June, I can't remember if it was last year or the year before, you spoke of, I believe your exact quote was, I hope there's an appetite for this certain governance. NIL came along, there weren't boundaries to it. It went this direction. It went that direction. People utilized this. The house settlement changed things. Revenue sharing came about. But then it also takes governance and people wanting to be governed. And we've seen the news stories of schools not wanting to sign the New Deal, or at least wanting to delay signing that as long as possible so they can still do the old stuff until the new rules come in. So I'm just curious your thoughts as to where we are in January of 2026 with all that's been going on with that and the conferences and all the discussions since July 1 happened and the House settlement went into effect.
I would say we're very unfinished. You know, I really do believe we are in an evolution of college athletics, and I don't believe that where we are today is where we're going to be in 5 or 8 years. I think that these are necessary steps to get to a final endpoint, because I think that there isn't an appetite or there isn't an understanding of exactly where we want the endpoint to be. And so these become a series of incremental steps as opposed to one really big step that I think could just really be problematic for the system. I think we're still learning whether people want to be governed or not. The thing that has really struck me over the last 6 or 8 months in particular is that, and forgive me if I get too esoteric here, but you know, we really are just in a moment in college athletics of incredible self-interest. And what I mean by that is we're all victims of the system that we've created. Victims is a strong word. We're all existing in this system that we've created. The system that we've created places incredible pressure on coaches, student athletes, administrators to succeed or be moved on. Right? That's ultimately where we are. If you don't win at a sufficient level within a given amount of time, then we're going to excuse you and we're going to find somebody else to try their hand at it. And the result of that is that whereas 10 years ago, 20 years ago, schools might have been willing to say, you know what, in the spirit of compromise, I'm willing to put my own priorities on the second burner to do something to support the Big Ten. Or, you know what, the Big Ten is willing to put its priorities on the back burner to do something to support the NCAA. But in today's day and age, because of the competitive pressures, there's an increasing unwillingness, understandably, from each level of the college athletics infrastructure not to place their own best interests behind anyone else's best interests because they don't have time. They don't have the runway to do that and still try and achieve their own objectives. Their own objectives have to stay first and foremost all the time. And you're seeing that play out in lots of different ways. And so I think about the NCAA last year. We went through a 12-month, really intense period of governance reform that ended with the Power Four conferences having weighted voting in the NCAA structure, where now, unlike before, if we could get the four conferences to agree on things, there's very little that the four conferences can't do. We have a clear path in front of us. If the four conferences can agree on things, it doesn't really matter what the other conferences think or want. We have the voting power to move agenda items forward. We felt really good about that in those moments. What we've learned since is that it's gotten really hard for the four conferences to agree on things. Mm-hmm. And as we were developing our plan, that really wasn't something that we spent a lot of time thinking about. We thought, well, the four conferences are always going to be, generally going to be in lockstep on major themes around the future of college athletics. Turns out that wasn't accurate in today's day and age because of this pressure on the conferences to support their membership to succeed. Otherwise, everybody gets turned over. And so, you know, there's an example of conferences not being willing to sometimes place their own best interest second to what the broader good may need. And then you're seeing that happen at the institutional level as well. And so, you know, at the end of the day, there are solutions out there, but we're going to have to get some level of willingness to put the best interests of the whole first. And so, you know, just as an example, schools are suing the NCAA, the organization that we've all raised our hand and willingly said, I want to be a part of. And then when the rules aren't applied in a way that we agree with, yeah, we immediately, instead of going through the internal processes that are built into the NCAA governance structure, now the answer is to sue the association.
Mm-hmm.
That's a relatively new phenomenon that maybe happened on occasion in the past, but not with the frequency that it is today. And that's not good for the NCAA. There always isn't a problem with the NCAA's rules. We have to have some rules. We have to have rules that govern eligibility. We have to have rules that govern student-athlete benefits. But in this day and age, if those eligibility rules don't happen to help your program, then there's a lot of pressure on you as a program to take it to the mattresses. And that's good for your school, maybe not so good for the future of the NCAA or the betterment of the association as a whole.
Yeah, I could ask 70. I know your time is short. I have about 103 questions in my head, but I want to get to everything else. Our producer, Maisie, is a student in journalism here at U of I, and so we wanted to give her the opportunity to ask a question. So I'm going to throw it to Maisie and let her ask.
Hit me with it, Maisie.
So just kind of circling back to, you know, stadium, kind of biggest thing so far this season was the donation from Larry Geese. I am just curious. He said it at the ceremony. First time he met you, he said, do not ask me for any money. I am not donating to your program. So I'm curious from your perspective what you did to change that, and then looking forward to more potential donors, especially in the day of NIL, sponsorships, all of that.
It's a great question, and you know, it's been 7 years since that dinner that Larry and I had in Chicago, and I've never forgotten it. I know he hasn't either. All I can say is that we built a relationship, and I believe that successful fundraising, especially major gift fundraising, is really the result of incredible relationships. And if Howard Milton, our chief development officer, were sitting here, he would tell you that we talk all the time about making these things personal. We do not want and cannot allow our relationships with our top donors to feel transactional. There's a reason that we go to a lot of funerals, we go to a lot of weddings, we go to a lot of graduation parties, because their lives matter to us just as much as we're asking our lives to matter to them. And so it's just a function of time and connection and spending that time building a relationship with someone, in this case Larry, so that he gained a better understanding of our program, gained a better understanding of me, candidly, and where we thought our opportunities lied. And most important, I think, for Larry, giving him a stronger understanding of how a successful athletics program can benefit the entire University of Illinois. And that's something that I'm passionate about, because it's a message that I carry to our provost, to our faculty members, to so many people, our deans, about how a strong athletics department can ultimately uplift everybody connected to this institution. And so as we spent more time together, Larry had the chance to gain, I guess, an insider's perspective on why we believe that to be the case. And then it just happened to coincide with us having a really significant uptick in our success. And at the same time, you're able to see with your own eyes and in real time how the entire university is changing. And I would never sit here and say it's all because of what's happening in athletics, but I will tell you, I believe it's at least in part due to what's happening in athletics. And I think that, you know, you look at the growth in applications, you look at the improvement in the quality of those applications, you look at the donations that are coming into the university, not just to the athletics program, you look at the quality of the undergraduate experience and the fact that we've got 8,000 students coming to our football games. These are the things that matter for a university, and they are without question getting better as our athletics program has gotten better. And so having a chance to share that story with Larry, and then thankfully having that story sort of play out in real time as we were developing that relationship, I think was really critical to his ultimate choice to make that investment in us.
I could pass along that a good friend of mine who is a professor and well-regarded in his field here at the University of Illinois has come around on it too. He's experienced that, didn't have much of an interest in sports. There are people like that apparently. but has come around to understand that it's the front door, the front porch. Athletics has the front porch, and is very, I would say, impressed and grateful with what U of I Athletics does now. So I'll just pass that on anecdotally to you. Now, before I let you go, I just wanted to bring up one thing. I maybe a pride point for myself against Robert here, in that, you know, I've seen now a few times with Robert, his tailgating, his fire truck, early in the morning. And I've had on occasion the opportunity to participate in your run club on game day. And so I can run past Robert right along lot 31 and wave and taunt him because he's not in the run club.
I woke up earlier, though.
That's probably true. Now, I don't know if you know I've been in the run club because I'm usually finishing last.
No, so no. I've seen you many times.
No. But I think, no, actually, that's just been a great kind of community building experience for a lot of different people to come together, want to get a run in, start their day right. You've done some neat things with folks to on special occasions, the 100th dedication, Veterans Day this past, the Military Appreciation Day. So thanks for the run club. It's a great – I hope more people come out to it. As long as your donut budget allows.
The donut budget's there. So I appreciate that. It's really been a cool experience. You never know how something like that will develop. It was just something I did kind of on a lark when I first started. And now, with the exception of COVID, we've done it every home game that I've been here. There were some games where we'd only have 10 or 12 people, and now I would say our smallest crowds are 35, 40 people. It's really been fun to watch it grow. And like you said, we've done a couple special events, the 100 runners for 100 years. I think we had 177 runners, appropriately enough, for that game.
Love it.
And then last year for the Veterans Day game, when the ROTC came out and ran with us, was one I'll remember for a long time. And so it's been a cool way to get to know some people, and I think it's let them see a different side of me, and just built into a nice tradition. We've done it at every bowl game, just most recently down in Nashville, and so it's really become a cool part of my game day, and candidly holds me a little accountable too, because there have been a few Saturday mornings where I would have, after some long events on Friday night, where I would have been like, you know what, I might sleep in today, and it gets me out of bed and gets me moving.
I'm just praying my knees hold out.
Same.
Because it's enjoyable. Congratulations on 10 years as the athletic director of the University of Illinois. Congrats on all the successes. Here's to many more.
Thanks very much, guys. I appreciate all that both of you do. Thanks so much.
Thanks for doing this.
We'll be right back to wrap up on this edition of Light the Eye. Thanks so much to Josh Whitman for joining us on the brink of his 10-year anniversary of being the athletic director for the University of Illinois. What do we get? What do you get an athletic director for his anniversary?
Didn't we establish it was paper? Like 10 is paper? So
oh, yeah.
Something on paper.
All right. Well, find a piece of paper for Josh.
A certificate.
No, thank you for providing some time, because athletic directors are really busy.
And there were a number of issues that we didn't get to. I do wonder, you know, you, at one point you said this is the topic, NIL and governance, that everyone's talking about amongst college fans. And I think that's true to an extent. I think there's a whole pocket, though, of fans that know that things are different. But, hey, I'm rooting for my team. Stadiums are still full.
Mm-hmm.
TV ratings are doing fine. There is an aspect to this where I think some people look at it and say things have changed. Maybe I like it, maybe I don't, but I'm here for the sports and I'm here for my team and my school.
Yeah, I think what's maybe occurring is that some things are eroding behind the scenes, and we won't really see what has eroded until we get further down the line with it and we see some of the, oh, well, then now that means, you know, we saw some of that with the NCAA and they're powerless and they lost all these lawsuits and suddenly everybody's like, oh, good, we hated the NCAA. And then we get to these points of like, hey, who's going to step in here with rules here? And it's probably the NCAA over there saying, you all just told us you don't need us. You know, so there's these like secondary things that are going to happen in the years to come. It's a fascinating topic. Like I said, I could ask 100+ questions about that stuff. It fascinates.
And as products of the system, Josh Whitman indicated there's a lot of people operating in self-interest, maybe because they just have to for mm-hmm. their own protection. It reminded me a little bit of kind of politics
sure.
right now, where if you are elected, the next thing you're doing is worrying about how to stay in your seat, how to get reelected, and sometimes at the expense of what you know might be for the betterment of all.
Yep.
And what are you supposed to do? You're caught between, if I don't work towards reelection, then I can't work towards the things I want to work toward.
Yep.
If I don't protect myself as a school and we don't do everything we can to win right now, it won't matter in our minds whatever the greater good will be in 5-10 years for a particular sport or the whole of college athletics. So I'm sure we can just solve all this in a future podcast.
I think so. Yeah, it is the most complicated time, you know, like for writing wise, for me to come up with how do I approach this topic. This is about as difficult as it gets, because people are just willing to accept the standard of like, oh, well, donors are throwing money at players and they're transferring because of the Mark Cuban wrote a check, and you know, well, it can't work like that. It's not exactly working like that. But everybody's just generalized this whole thing, and it's like, oh, well, then that's it. So then the nuance is lost, and it's hard to even discuss in that environment. So crazy, crazy time.
And whatever nuance is there gets a little bit lost in the social media world.
Yes. Are you familiar with nuance getting lost in social media, Scott?
But don't let that stop you from reaching out to us, whether it be social media or
through
traditional email. You can email us at lighttheeyepodcast@gmail.com. That's lighttheeyepodcast@gmail.com. Or leave a comment if you're following us on YouTube, or you can reach out to us on Twitter, light_the_i. For producer Maisie Garrett and for Robert Rosenthal, I'm Scott Beatty. Thanks so much for joining us. We'll talk to you again real soon on Light the Eye.